pause. Maybe you're right. I don't know, this isn't really my world. Look, where are we driving to exactly, so I can tell Eric? Don't bring him, she said quickly. I know, he replied with exaggerated patience. I'm not stupid. We're driving to my house. It's in my house. There was a short silence, bewilderment this time. In your house? I thought your house was full of zombies. Forsaken warriors. They're not zombies. Anyway, Jason and the others can take care of them while I get the cup. Why do you have to get the cup? He sounded alarmed. Because I'm the only one that can, she said. Pick us up at the corner as soon as you can. He muttered something nearly inaudible, then... Fine. She opened her eyes. The world swam before her in a blur of tears. Thanks, Simon, she said. You're a... But he had hung up.
It occurs to me, said Hodge, that the dilemmas of power are always the same.
Clary glanced at him sideways. What do you mean? She sat on the window seat in the library, Hodge in his chair with Hugo on the armrest. The remains of breakfast, sticky jam, toast crumbs, and smears of butter, clung to a stack of plates on the low table that no one had seemed inclined to clear away. After breakfast, they had scattered to prepare themselves, and Clary had been the first one back. This was hardly surprising, considering that all she had to do was pull on jeans and a shirt and run a brush through her hair, while everyone else had to arm themselves heavily. Having lost Jace's dagger in the hotel, the only remotely supernatural object she had on her was the witchlight stone in her pocket.
I was thinking of your Simon, Hodge said, and of Alec and Jace, among others.
She glanced out the window. It was raining, thick, fat drops spattering across the panes. The sky was an impenetrable gray. What do they have to do with each other?
Where there is feeling that is not requited, said Hodge, there is an imbalance of power. It is an imbalance that is easy to exploit, but it is not a wise course. Where there is love, there is often also hate. They can exist side by side.
Simon doesn't hate me.
He might grow to, over time, if he felt you were using him.
Hodge held up a hand.
I know you do not intend to, and in some cases, necessity trumps nicety of feeling. But the situation has put me in mind of another. Do you still have that photograph I gave you?
Clary shook her head. Not on me. It's back in my room. I could go get it.
No.
Hodge stroked Hugo's ebony feathers.
When your mother was young, she had a best friend, just as you have Simon. They were as close as siblings. In fact, they were often mistaken for brother and sister. As they grew older, it became clear to everyone around them that he was in love with her, but she never saw it. She always called him a friend.
Clary stared at Hodge. Do you mean Luke?
Yes, said Hodge. Lucian always thought he and Jocelyn would be together. When she met and loved Valentine, he could not bear it. After they were married, he left the circle, disappeared, and let us all think that he was dead.
He never said, never even hinted at anything like that, Clary said. All these years, he could have asked her.
He knew what the answer would be, said Hodge,
looking past her toward the rain-spattered skylight.
Lucian was never the sort of man who would have deluded himself. No, he contented himself with being near her, assuming, perhaps, that over time her feelings might change.
But if he loved her, why did he tell those men he didn't care what happened to her? Why did he refuse to let them tell him where she was?
As I said before, where there is love, there is also hatred, said Hodge. She hurt him badly all those years ago. She turned her back on him. And yet he has played her faithful lapdog ever since, never remonstrating, never accusing, never confronting her with his feelings. Perhaps he saw an opportunity to turn the tables, to hurt her as he'd been hurt.
Luke wouldn't do that. But Clary was remembering his icy tone as he told her not to ask him for favors. She saw the hard look in his eyes as he faced Valentine's men. That wasn't the Luke she'd known, the Luke she'd grown up with. That Luke would have never wanted to punish her mother for not loving him enough or in the right way. But she did love him, Clary said, speaking aloud without realizing it. It just wasn't the same way he loved her. Isn't that enough?
Perhaps he didn't think so.
What will happen after we get the cup? She said. How will we reach Valentine to let him know we have it?
Hugo will find him.
The rain smashed against the windows. Clary shivered. I'm going to get a jacket, she said, slipping off the window seat. She found her green and pink hoodie stuffed down at the bottom of her backpack. When she pulled it out, she heard something crinkle. It was the photograph of the circle, her mother and Valentine. She looked at it for a long moment before slipping it back into the bag. When she returned to the library, the others were all gathered there, Hodge sitting watchfully with Hugo on his shoulder, Jace all in black, Isabel with her demon stomping boots and gold whip, and Alec with a quiver of arrows strapped across his shoulder and a leather bracer sheathing his right arm from wrist to elbow. Everyone but Hodge was covered in freshly applied marks, every inch of bare skin inked with swirling patterns. Jace had his left sleeve pulled up, chin on his shoulder, and was frowning as he scrawled an octagonal mark on the skin of his upper arm. Alec looked over at him. "You're messing it up," he said. "Let me do that."
"I'm left-handed," Jace pointed out, but he spoke mildly and held his steely out.
Alec looked relieved as he took it, as if he hadn't been sure until now that he was forgiven for his earlier behavior.
"It's a basic erotzi," Jace said, as Alec bent his dark head over Jace's arm, carefully tracing the lines of the healing rune.
Jace winced as the steely slid over his skin, his eyes half-closing and his fist tightening until the muscles of his left arm stood out like cords.
"By the angel, Alec."
"I'm trying to be careful," said Alec. He let go of Jace's arm and stepped back to admire his handiwork.
"There."
Jace unclenched his fist, lowering his arm.
"Thanks."
He seemed to sense Clary's presence then, glancing over at her, his gold eyes narrowing.
"Clary?"
"You look ready," she said as Alec suddenly flushed, moved away from Jace and busied himself with his arrows.
"We are," Jace said. "Do you still have that dagger I gave you?"
"No, I lost it in the Demort, remember?"
"That's right."
Jace looked at her, pleased.
"Nearly killed a werewolf with it, I remember."
Isabel, who had been standing by the window, rolled her eyes.
"I forgot that's what gets you all hot and bothered, Jace. Girls killing things."
"I like anyone killing things," he said equably. "Especially me."
Clary glanced anxiously toward the clock on the desk. "We should go downstairs. Simon will be here any minute." Hodge stood up from his chair. He looked very tired, Clary thought, as if he hadn't slept in days.
"May the angel watch over you all," he said,
and Hugo rose up from his shoulder into the air, cawing loudly, just as the noon bells began to ring. It was still drizzling when Simon pulled the van up at the corner and honked twice. Clary's heart leaped. Some part of her had been worried that he wasn't going to show up. Jace squinted through the dripping rain. The four of them had taken shelter under a carved stone cornice.
"That's the van. It looks like a rotting banana."
This was undeniable. Eric had painted the van a neon shade of yellow, and it was blotched with dings and rust like splotches of decay. Simon honked again. Clary could see him, a blurred shape through the wet windows. She sighed and pulled her hood up to cover her hair. "Let's go." They splashed through the filthy puddles that had collected on the pavement, Isabel's enormous boots making a satisfying noise every time she put her feet down. Simon, leaving the motor idling, crawled into the back to pull the door aside, revealing seats whose upholstery had half-rotted through. Dangerous-looking springs poked through the gaps. Isabel wrinkled her nose.
"Is it safe to sit?"
"Safer than being strapped to the roof," said Simon pleasantly. "Which is your other option?"
He nodded a greeting to Jason Alec, ignoring Clary completely.
"Hey." "Hey, indeed," said Jace, and lifted the rattling canvas duffel bag that held their weapons. "Where can we put these?"
Simon directed him to the back, where the boys usually kept their musical instruments, while Alec and Isabel crawled into the van's interior and perched on the seats.
"Shotgun," announced Clary as Jace came back around the side of the van.
Alec grabbed for his bow, strapped across his back.
"Where?"
"She means she wants the front seat," said Jace, pushing wet hair out of his eyes.
"That's a nice bow," said Simon, with a nod toward Alec.
Alec blinked, rain running off his eyelashes.
"Do you know much about archery?"
he asked, in a tone that suggested that he doubted it.
I did archery at camp, said Simon. 6 years running.
The response to this was three blank stares and a supportive smile from Clary, which Simon ignored. He glanced up at the lowering sky.
We should go before it starts pouring again.
The front seat of the car was covered in Doritos wrappers and Pop-Tart crumbs. Clary brushed away what she could. Simon put his foot down on the gas pedal before she'd finished, flinging her back against the seat.
Ouch, she said reprovingly.
Sorry. He didn't look at her. Clary could hear the others talking softly in the back amongst themselves, probably discussing battle strategies and the best way to behead a demon without getting ichor on your new leather boots. Though there was nothing separating the front seat from the rest of the van, Clary felt the awkward silence between her and Simon as if they were alone.
So what's with that hay thing? She asked, as Simon maneuvered the car onto the FDR Parkway, the highway that ran alongside the East River.
What hay thing? He replied, cutting off a black SUV whose occupant, a suited man with a cell phone in his hand, made an obscene gesture at them through the tinted windows.
The hey thing that guys always do. Like, when you saw Jason Alec, you said, hey, and they said, hey, back. What's wrong with hello?
She thought she saw a muscle twitch in his cheek.
Hello is girly, he informed her. Real men are terse, laconic.
So the more manly you are, the less you say?
Right, Simon nodded.
Past him, she could see the humid fog lowering over the East River, shrouding the waterfront in feathery gray mist. The water itself was the color of lead, churned to a whipped cream consistency by the steady wind.
That's why when major badasses greet each other in movies, they don't say anything. They just nod. The nod means, I am a badass, and I recognize that you too are a badass. But they don't say anything because they're Wolverine and Magneto, and it would mess up their vibe to explain.
I have no idea what you're talking about, said Jace from the back seat.
Good, Clary said, and was rewarded by the smallest of smiles from Simon as he turned the van onto the Manhattan Bridge, heading toward Brooklyn and home. By the time they reached Clary's house, it had finally stopped raining. Threaded beams of sunlight were burning away the remnants of mist, and the puddles on the sidewalk were drying. Jace, Alec, and Isabel made Simon and Clary wait by the van while they went to check, as Jace said, the demonic activity levels. Simon watched as the three shadow hunters headed up the rose-lined walkway to the house.
Demonic activity levels? Do they have a device that measures whether the demons inside the house are doing power yoga?
No, Clary said, pushing her damp hood back so she could enjoy the feel of the sunlight on her draggled hair. The sensor tells them how powerful the demons are, if there are any demons.
Simon looked impressed.
That is useful.
She turned to him.
Simon, about last night.
He held up a hand.
We don't have to talk about it. In fact, I'd rather not.
Just let me say one thing. She spoke quickly. I know that when you said you loved me, what I said back wasn't what you wanted to hear.
True. I'd always hoped that when I finally said I love you to a girl, she'd say, I know, back, like Leia did to Han in Return of the Jedi.
That is so geeky,
Clary said, unable to help herself. He glared at her.
Sorry, she said. Look, Simon, I...
No, he said, you look, Clary. Look at me, and really see me. Can you do that?
She looked at him, looked at the dark eyes, flecked with lighter color toward the outside edge of the iris, at the familiar, slightly uneven eyebrows, the long lashes, the dark hair and hesitating smile and graceful musical hands that were all part of Simon, who was part of her. If she had to tell the truth, would she really say that she'd never known that he loved her? Or just that she'd never known what she would do about it if he did? She sighed. Seeing through glamour is easy. It's people that are hard.
We all see what we want to see, he said quietly.
Not Jace, she said, unable to help herself, thinking of those clear, impassive eyes.
Him more than anyone.
She frowned. What do you...
All right, came Jace's voice, interrupting them.
Clary turned hastily.
We've checked all four corners of the house. Nothing. Low activity. Probably just the Forsaken, and they might not even bother us unless we try getting into the upstairs apartment.
And if they do, said Isabel, her grin as glittering as her whip, we'll be ready for them. Alec dragged the heavy canvas bag out of the back of the van, dropping it on the sidewalk.
"Ready to go," he announced. "Let's kick some demon butt."
Jace looked at him a little oddly.
"You all right?"
"Fine."
Not looking at him, Alec discarded his bow and arrow in favor of a polished wooden feather staff with two glittering blades that appeared at a light touch from his fingers. "This is better." Isabel looked at her brother with concern.
"But the bow..."
Alec cut her off. "I know what I'm doing, Isabel." The bow lay across the back seat, gleaming in the sunlight. Simon reached for it, then drew his hand back as a laughing group of young women pushing strollers headed up the street in the direction of the park. They took no notice of the three heavily armed teenagers crouched by the yellow van.
"How come I can see you guys?" Simon asked. "What happened to that invisibility magic of yours?"
"You can see us," said Jace, "because now you know the truth of what you're looking at."
"Yeah," said Simon. "I guess I do."
He protested a little when they asked him to stay by the van, but Jace impressed upon him the importance of having a getaway vehicle idling by the curb.
"Well, sunlight's fatal to demons, but it won't hurt the Forsaken. What if they chase us? What if the car gets towed?"
The last Clary saw of Simon as she turned to wave from the front porch was his long legs propped up on the dashboard as he sorted through Eric's CD collection. She breathed a sigh of relief. At least Simon was safe. The smell hit her the moment they walked through the front door. It was almost indescribable, like spoiled eggs and maggoty meat and seaweed rotting on a hot beach. Isabel wrinkled her nose and Alec turned greenish, but Jace looked as if he were inhaling rare perfume.
"Demons have been here," he announced with cold delight. "Recently, too."
Clary looked at him anxiously.
"But they're not still..."
"No," he shook his head. "We would have sensed it."
"Still."
He jerked his chin at Dorothea's door, tightly shut without a wisp of light peeking from underneath.
"She might have some questions to answer if the Clave hears she's been entertaining demons."
"I doubt the Clave will be too pleased about any of this," said Isabel. "On balance, she'll probably come out of it better than we do."
"They won't care as long as we get the cup in the end."
Alec was glancing around, blue eyes taking in the sizable foyer, the curved staircase leading upstairs, the stains on the walls.
"Especially if we slaughter a few Forsaken while we do it."
Jace shook his head.
"They're in the upstairs apartment. My guess is that they won't bother us unless we try to get in."
Isabel blew a sticky strand of hair out of her face and frowned at Clary.
"What are you waiting for?"
Clary glanced involuntarily at Jace, who gave her a sideways smile.
"Go ahead," said his eyes.
She moved across the foyer toward Dorothea's door, stepping carefully. With the skylight blackened with dirt and the entryway light bulb still out, the only illumination came from Jace's witchlight. The air was hot and close, and the shadows seemed to rise up before her like magically fast-growing plants in a nightmare forest. She reached up to knock on Dorothea's door, once lightly, and then again with more force. It swung open, spilling a great wash of golden light into the foyer. Dorothea stood there, massive and imposing in swaths of green and orange. Today, her turban was neon yellow, adorned with a stuffed canary and rick-rack trim. Chandelier earrings bobbed against her hair, and her big feet were bare. Clary was surprised. She'd never seen Dorothea barefoot before, or wearing anything other than her faded carpet slippers. Her toenails were a pale and very tasteful shell pink.
"Clary!" she exclaimed, and swept Clary into an overwhelming embrace.
For a moment, Clary struggled, embroiled in a sea of perfumed flesh, swaths of velvet, and the tasseled ends of Dorothea's shawl.
"Good Lord, girl," said the witch, shaking her head until her earrings swung like wind chimes in a storm. "The last time I saw you, you were disappearing through my portal. Where'd you end up?"
"Williamsburg," said Clary, catching her breath.
Dorothea's eyebrows shot skyward.
"And they say there's no convenient public transportation in Brooklyn."
She swung the door open and gestured for them to come in. The place looked unchanged from the last time Clary had seen it. There were the same tarot cards and crystal balls scattered on the table. Her fingers itched for the cards, itched to snatch them up and see what might lie hidden inside their slickly painted surfaces. Dorothea sank gratefully into an armchair and regarded the shadow hunters with a stare as beady as the eyes of the stuffed canary on her hat. Scented candles burned in dishes on either side of the table, which did little to dispel the thick stench pervading every inch of the house.
"I take it you haven't located your mother," she asked Clary.
Clary shook her head.